You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders, past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double. Clap your hands.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast on Tuesday today, which is the 10th of February 2026. And thank you to the Radioactive Show, 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung, and we've got a full house in the studio today. We've got Julia, Fiza, Juliet, and Elena.
Yeah, and not enough mics.
But a full house, which is great.
Yeah.
How is everyone? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think before, just off mic, we were talking about the scenes from yesterday's rallies across so-called Australia against the visit of Israeli President Herzog. And, yeah, we were just talking about some of the scenes that we have witnessed here in Nam, but also... Yeah, in Sydney as well.
I think just a good time to maybe remind our listeners, if you have Muslim friends, brown, like BIPOC friends, to check in on them, because those scenes were pretty confronting. And as much as I think we've become so desensitized to the sight and knowledge of these bodies being brutalized, it helps to know our friends realize that this is not normal and we should never normalize it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's so right, Fiza, because, there is just so much footage that we're being confronted with all the time.
Yeah.
And whether that's, people of colour, black people, First Nations people being brutalised here on this continent or elsewhere in the world, yeah, I think you're right. Like, it should not be normalised.
100%, especially because, yes, we are, like, seeing so much of it and just resharing it, and I get it. Like, it's important to know, but it's also important to remember that it's violence. We are witnessing violence on a very constant and regular basis, and to just, check in on each other, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think maybe I'll just jump in here to say that, there's going to be, we're going to see reports coming out of mainstream media about what's been happening. And I think it's important to know that, there are people on the ground filming and independent journalists who are doing amazing work representing the voice of the people. 3CR included, of course.
Yes.
We're currently... encouraging people to subscribe to the station. And if you're a member of the station, you get to have a say what happens at 3CR. And just a reminder that 3CR is independent and commercial-free radio. If you just subscribe, you also get like a yearly 3CR magazine called The Cram Guide. Julia, I know you've written for The Cram Guide before.
Yes, last year.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, do you want to give listeners like a quick... description of what The Cram Guide is?
Yeah, so I guess The Cram Guide is kind of like a little print publication that 3CR puts out every year, usually interviews with different programmers at 3CR. So, kind of we'll be talking about them and their involvement at 3CR and a bit about their programs. So,
yeah, which is like such a cool way to, sometimes like all the shows can seem really separate And it's such a massive station, but yeah, like what Juliet said, like the Cram Guide is such a great way to like reflect on everyone coming together as a community, all the different like puzzle pieces that make this amazing station. So yeah, if you would like to subscribe, you can go online to 3cr.org.au, and there are a bunch of different options. So if you're waged, or if you are unwaged, concession or pension, if you're a band or organization, or if you would like to subscribe as a solidarity member as well. Yeah, any other messages to encourage people to subscribe?
It's our 50th anniversary. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, which is so amazing. And if you look back, like 3CR has done some incredible reporting, 100%, and for example, just as one example, has always been staunchly pro-Palestine since the beginning.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think there'll be more to come about the 50th anniversary. Absolutely. But yeah, definitely keep an eye out and an ear out for more. Okay, so let's have a chat about what is coming up on today's show. We're starting today's program by sharing an excerpt from 3CR's Think Again, where co-host Jennifer Burrell spoke to Marie Party, who is one of the authors of a new report by Footscray Community Response. And this report has evaluated Maribyrnong Council's use of security guards or security patrols in the area. And we're playing this because next Tuesday you can join Footscray Community Response at Maribyrnong Town Hall for a speak out, and we'll be giving you more information about that later. At 7:30, we'll be joined again by Lucinda Thorpe from Digital Rights Watch. Last week, we started a conversation about Palantir, the tech giant, and how they're enabling forces like ICE in the US and allegedly working with the IOF in Palestine. And today, we'll be talking about their influence in Australia.
And at 7:45, we'll be listening to Palestinian activist Mai Saif, who spoke yesterday at the protest against Isaac Herzog at the Flinders Street station. She shared about her lived experience living through occupation in occupied Palestine, and the dehumanizing ideology that stems from Zionism. At 8 o'clock, we will then speak to Janice Gobi, the chair for Writers Victoria, about the decision for Creative Victoria to abruptly cut 100% of annual funding provided to Victorian Writers Organisation.
And then finally, at 8:15, we're going to be speaking to Renee Chopping from Collective Shout, which is a campaign against the sexual objectification of women and girls in media. And we're going to be specifically talking about recent controversies around the Grok app and how its image editing has been used to sexualize women and children.
So that's all that we've got coming up for today's show. Stay tuned, we'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment.
Some folks know about it, some don't.
Some know.
Some will learn to shout it, some won't.
Some won't.
But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Now one, two, nitty-gritty nine.
These are the news headlines for Tuesday, the 10th of February, 2026. Australians' biometric information and ID documents will be quietly given to the United States agencies such as the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, and the Trump administration by the Albanese government. This is due to a U.S. demand for higher security amongst all countries with the visa waiver program arrangements. The Electronic System for Travel Authorization, the ESTA, currently allows Australians to enter the U.S. under visa-free arrangements. However, in December, the Trump administration began demanding that Australians and other ESTA users entering the U.S. provide biometric information and social media histories. In 2022, the Biden administration announced that in order to maintain participation in the visa waiver program, countries would have to agree to an Enhanced Border Security Partnership, EBSP. with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, under which the U.S. would have full access to other countries' biometric and ID databases. Under the EBSP, agencies like ICE would be able to access Australian databases to investigate anyone entering the U.S. This information sharing would not just be limited to people seeking to enter the U.S. or have ever been there. It would also apply to individuals encountered by law enforcement in a border or immigration context in the United States, a clear reference to ICE.
Also in the news, new figures show that the number of people in Australia living with dementia is growing. In 2026, the number of people living with dementia is estimated at 446,500 and is expected to more than double to reach over a million by 2065, according to Dementia Australia. The data reveals that dementia is affecting people of all ages, with 29,000 people aged 18 to 65 living with young onset dementia and a further 1,500 children with childhood dementia. In Victoria alone, there are 113,900 people living with a form of dementia. Dementia Australia CEO Tanya Buchanan is urging for the government to act now to intervene on what is the leading cause of death in this country. Buchanan explained, "There is a critical demand for a national program to promote brain health throughout our lives, as well as a pressing need to provide quality care and support services for people of all ages living with dementia, their families and carers." Buchanan continued, "Dementia Australia is calling for essential investment from the federal government in implementing the National Dementia Action Plan, a 10-year government framework released in late 2024, aiming to improve the lives of people living with dementia and their carers." In other news, a new survey conducted by the national housing campaign Everybody's Home has found that frontline services are currently being pushed to a breaking point due to the worsening of the housing crisis. The survey entitled No Way Out found that almost 90% of services reported increased workloads over the past year, and nearly all services are anticipating a further increase in demand in 2026. For 80% of organisations, this is either significantly impacting daily operations or the effectiveness of their programs. And amongst frontline workers, 3 in 4 are experiencing increased stress or burnout. And Everybody's Home spokesperson Mai Aziz commented, "This is not a short-term spike or seasonal surge. Housing stress is getting more extreme every year, putting relentless pressure on staff and stretching organisations to their limits." Aziz added, "This crisis is the result of decades of policy choices that prioritise supporting investors over social housing for people who need it."
Finally, in the headlines, yesterday across Australian cities, masses protested against Israeli President Isaac Herzog's Australia visit. In Sydney, police were reported to be violently clashing with the protesters, utilising pepper spray and horses against protesters, as 27 protesters were arrested out of the 4,000 in attendance. In Sydney, protesters risked arrest if they protested within areas authorities claim to be designated protected areas during Herzog's visit. Palestine Action Group organiser Josh Lees reported police violently attacked thousands of peaceful protesters in Sydney, stating that the police were yelling at us to disperse while having kettled us so no one could disperse. Major police presence at the protest seems to reveal the New South Wales Labor Premier Chris Minns' aim to intimidate those in solidarity with Palestine, in an attempt to connect the Bondi massacre on the 14th of December to the peaceful Palestine protests. Herzog's visit is not seen by many as a symbol of peace, but rather a reminder of the ongoing unacknowledged genocide against Palestinians. Several Jewish organisations have sent a letter forward to Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke, urging him to redact the visa for Israeli President Isaac Herzog. Anti-Zionism is not to be confused with anti-Semitism. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, 10th of February. You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. Marie Party is the lead author of a new report by Footscray Community Response, which evaluates Maribyrnong Council's use of security patrols to address social and health issues. The research found that the council's reliance on security, police and surveillance is causing direct harm to those targeted, and it is undermining the safety and well-being of the broader community. Marie spoke to Jennifer Burrell for 3CR's Think Again about this report and the controversial security program that has been found to make the area less safe. This conversation first aired on 3CR on Friday, the 6th of February.
Marie, can you tell the story behind this new evaluation report and why community members and representatives thought that this evaluation was even necessary, including your own role and how you came to be involved?
It came from the group, the grassroots organisation, as you called it. You already introduced Footscray Community Response. And this group actually is quite a new group. It emerged in the wake of a terribly tragic accident in Footscray in April last year. In April last year, the police decided to have what they called a strong show of force in Footscray, and they initiated a three-week operation where they said they would saturate the area in order to make it more secure and safe and so on. And then less than a week into that program, a Somali-born refugee, very known to the community in the CBD area of Footscray, Abdi Fatah Ahmed, was shot and killed by Victoria police officers in the suburb. Now, Abdi Fatah was homeless. He also experienced other mental health challenges, and the police claimed that they were in some danger because of him. This is a contested claim. But the death occurred at 9 p.m. on a busy corner in central Footscray. There were quite a number of people around who saw this, who were distressed and shocked. The shooting entailed not just one shot, but multiple shots. And this all just happened very quickly. It happened on the Thursday before Easter, so it was Good Friday the next day. Mm. After that day, on the Good Friday, the Easter Friday, a number of people gathered in a sort of impromptu vigil that was held at the place where he was shot. About 100 people came, and the mood was very somber and distressed, but people were also angry. And I guess the tenor of that moment was like, we need care in this area. We need housing, we need health, we need community health expansion. But what we got was police and police dogs and weapons, and within 1 week, someone from the community was dead. Oh. And so people were outraged about that and really quite distressed. And then a few days later, the African community, the African retailers and community members who were really shocked and sad and angry, organised a rally in the city, in the central area. And then they marched to the police station. There were about 250 people marched to the police station and asked for answers, and were very aggrieved and grief-stricken, as you could imagine. And so what happened was that people from that point said, we have to do something. The people in the community have to take on responsibility for advocating and for creating a more caring community. And so a number of people got together, as you say, at Borderlands. Borderlands just hosted the meeting. And that group was talking about the sorts of responses they wanted to engage with. And then very quickly, the Maribyrnong Council decided that, yes, there was an issue with safety in the central area of Footscray, and that they would vote, or they would put forward at the council meeting, to engage a private security firm for a six-month period. And their aim was that they would employ these security guards to accompany the bylaws officers, who had reasonably said that, you know, their work was really difficult and that they needed some support. And so, yeah, Maribyrnong Council decided It was an interesting response to...
Mm. It's a law and order response, almost.
Yeah. It was a funny response that, you know, members of the community, someone from the community had been killed, and that the security guards were actually moved in to... what they said was to make it safe, but also to reduce antisocial behaviour. And so our work, Footscray Community Response, really... went into action after that, and we thought, well, if this is what they're going to do, and they did, they implemented the security guard program in September, we decided that we would actually watch the security guard program and engage with the community and observe and discuss and engage and look to see what how it affected people.
Yeah,
so that's what we did.
So, yeah. Marie, I just wanted to comment too, is it's interesting in relation to a community member being shot by police who is unwell. The response was, let's make the community safe, but the safety's not aimed at making people in his situation safe, and he's the one who was shot.
It was an extraordinary response, really, wasn't it? And so I think there are many questions about why that response was the one that local government prioritised.
Yeah, so just jumping into the report, can you talk a bit about, did the report find that the community's safer because of these security patrols?
Well, I mean, I think you raised a good question, Jennifer, because the question you just raised implicitly was safer for whom is the obvious question that follows from that question. And in short, our findings were that our community research found that there was no demonstrable improvements to so-called safety in the area, but it also, in some senses, aggravated some issues. So I think, you know, when you ask the question, did it make it safer, you'd have to assume that people are unsafe in Footscray. And so there is this huge problem with safety. And that's a vexed claim. And it's also a very vexed foundation from which you would establish a program. Because whether people are unsafe in Footscray is very questionable. But people have been encouraged to believe that they are that Footscray is not a safe place. And the principal reason for that is that there are a lot of people, or there's a cohort of people, who occupy public space in Footscray in ways that maybe are uncomfortable to see. Maybe they feel confronted by people who have obviously looked different. They have... They may drink, they may be using drugs, they may be just sitting and occupying public space where they're not deemed to be entitled to do so.
Maybe lowering the tone of the neighbourhood, is that it?
I think there's a real lot of tension between those who occupy public space through consumerism. So, for example, through sitting in outdoor areas and consuming alcohol and food, and those who occupy public space very close by who don't have the resources to do those things. So in areas where there is that kind of competition for public space, although there doesn't need to be any competition there because there's enough space there. So, I mean, I do think there are issues where people are afraid sometimes, when people might be having some, you know, episodes of psychosis or, you know, some forms of aggression and so on. So I think there are issues of discomfort there. But, I mean, I think the research, what we found was that it didn't really make the place any safer. And in some situations, it really aggravated and increased levels of hostility, and particularly hostility towards people who were occupying public space, and also danger for them as well. And then there was this sort of cycle of hostility, I think, that just the very presence of security staff, some of the people told us, triggered behaviours.
yes.
Triggered them, and, you know, they became involved in sort of cat and mouse dynamics sometimes, and then there were several incidents where there were serious acts of hostility and aggression.
Yeah. Well, I understand these guards, they don't have training in, we know about programs like community nurses and outreach support for homeless people. There's been programs like that for a long time, but this is not what these guards are doing. They're not trained how to deal with mental health, drug crisis. Sounds like they're not even trained to de-escalate. And from what I got from the report too, is often they're telling people to scull down their drinks.
Yeah, this is a really interesting issue. It's and it's very stark when you see the locations of where people are occupying space and meeting together and congregating. There's a particular area in the mall where people gather and they sit and they engage with each other. They all know each other. And, yes, they do drink alcohol from time to time. And that is, according to Maribyrnong local laws, is an offence to have opened alcohol containers. And so the security guards have been observed telling people to drink that alcohol very fast because they'll confiscate it from them. So people do. They're actually drinking the alcohol, which, of course, is creating more danger, both for those the person that's consuming the alcohol, but also or others who may have to interact with those people after that person is more inebriated.
Yes, and I'm just looking at some of the quotes from the report really make your hair stand on end. One service provider, who were consulted, I have clients who have been exposed to more physical violence than prior to the program at the hands of the security guards as well as other members of the public, which is terrible. And then another one says, a long-time Footscray resident who has been homeless for many years said the people patrolling Footscray often mocked her and made her feel worthless. She felt they judged her with no interest in her actual situation or needs. And just one more, I have never seen them helping protecting normal people. They're more concerned about protecting the shops and the shop owners, and maybe like the civilians who are not homeless, but not the actual people that live in the mall who are homeless people. I don't feel like they'd go out of their way to protect them. I don't think that's doing their job correctly, because they're supposed to be serving and protecting the community, and I'm part of the community, which is a good point.
I think it's not surprising that they're not interested in protecting those people, because I think those people have been deemed to be the problem to be solved. And the problem to be solved is not to address their social, health and economic housing needs of those people. And it's certainly not to respect their desire and their right to have social engagement with their friends and associates in public space.
The priority
really is to move those people away from that space, because there is a kind of aspirational dream about Footscray that somehow if you get rid of those people, you will attract a lot of business. And if you attract a lot of business, somehow Footscray will become a really wonderful place and not have to anymore see any evidence of the ravages of the austere system that we live in, which is actually about, you know, cutting services, refusing to provide people with housing, refusing to allow people who don't have money to occupy public space in the way that people who do have money are completely entitled to.
That was Marie Pardy from Footscray Community Response speaking to Jennifer Burrell on Think Again. This Next week, the 17th of February, Maribyrnong Council will vote on whether Footscray's unhoused community and other quote-unquote undesirables using public space should continue to be surveilled and criminalised by private security guards. You can join Footscray Community Response at 5:45 next Tuesday at Maribyrnong Town Hall for a speak out, and then they'll go to the council meeting together. You can find out more by going to footscraycommunity.net or follow the group at Footscray Community on Instagram. Think Again offers weekly conversations and reflections about current events, trends, and public pronouncements on contemporary and emerging issues. It airs on 3CR every Friday morning from 10 to 10:30 a.m. And I would highly recommend that you go back and catch the full conversation. You can do that by going to 3cr.org.au/thinkagain. We'll be back with our next interview in just a moment.
Hi, my name is Miss Kinnan. I'm a proud Yorta Yorta, Jajarong, Kalkadoon and Yirrindali Aboriginal Sovereign Woman. And you're listening to 3CR, guys. Check in with your friends. Make sure you guys are going good. And also stick up for what's right, yeah? Free Palestine.
We are now joined on the program by Lucinda Thorpe, who was here last week to speak to us about the tech giant Palantir and about its influence on US and world politics, as well as its roles in enabling Israel's genocide in Palestine and of ICE in the US. Lucinda is online privacy campaigner at Digital Rights Watch and is here again this morning for part two of this discussion, where she'll be speaking to us about Palantir's Australian clients, both governmental bodies and corporations. Welcome back to 3CR, Lucinda.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming back on the show to talk to us about Palantir. It's such a huge topic, which is why we needed this back-to-back discussion. So last week you told us about background information about Palantir, one of its founders, Peter Thiel, and his influence on US and global politics. And today we're talking about how Palantir has infiltrated, I guess, Australia. What can you tell us about some of the work that Palantir is doing with its Australian government clients, including the Department of Defence, the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission, and Australian Signals Directorate?
So since 2014, the Australian government has held over $37 million worth of contracts with Palantir. So we're seeing a massive investment there. Last year, Digital Rights Watch reached out to Katie Gallagher, who's the Minister for Finance, and we asked if she thought it was appropriate that the Australian government would economically support a company with such a poor human rights record. The response we received didn't really answer that question, but it did tell us that there are currently two active government contracts with Palantir. The first is with the Australian Transaction Reports and Analysis Centre, or AUSTRAC, and that one was for $12 million. And the second was with the Department of Defence for $7 million. But their past clients have included the ASD, Australian Signals Directorate, so intelligence, lots of ones with Department of Defence as of contracts there. And they have quite a few contracts with the State Departments of Victoria as well, which is interesting. Mm.
And I know that, I read on Crikey that Lizzie O'Shea from Digital Rights Watch also wrote a letter last year to cabinet members, you know, talking about the concerns about working with Palantir in terms of the data that is going to be collected in Australia, how it's stored and who can access it. What information do we know about this in terms of what they're doing with Australian data?
Yes, so our letter did also ask about that. And again, we didn't receive a lot of, shall we say, comforting responses, but what we know is that Palantir is a US-based company, and that means their data that's processed through their platforms might be subject to, or will be subject to, US law. Additionally, if that data is stored in the US, it's also going to be, say, subject to like US law and subpoenas as well. So where data is stored, accessed, or controlled from the US, it can fall within the reach of the US legal mechanism. And that's problematic because the US is quite an unstable place right now. And say there was, you know, sensitive data regarding, say, abortions in, you know, and it's being held in America, where in some states that's illegal. Like, that can pose, like, a real privacy risk to Australians. Also worth noting when it comes to data privacy for Australians and, you know, US and Palantir, this is just a recent development, but to keep visa-free travel to the US, Australia is negotiating an enhanced border security partnership, and this would allow US agencies to access Australian biometric and identity databases, including fingerprints, facial images, and ID records. Now, the bodies that access that, the government bodies, they all have contracts with Palantir to basically outsource all their data handling. So this means that Palantir would have access to Australian fingerprints, facial images, and ID records. So even though Palantir hasn't been provided access to this incredibly intimate Australian data through the Australian government, it's actually being accessed through a back end.
That is truly terrifying. And so what does that say when we've got, you know, foreign companies accessing and storing Australian data? What does that say about the dependence that, you know, Australian governmental bodies and corporations have on these companies that aren't even based here?
Yeah, so it's actually a really interesting conundrum because Australian privacy laws are quite weak. So there is something to be said for keeping your data stored in a location which has stronger privacy laws. But the flip side of that is it's often more expensive to store it there. So when you're giving a company your data, they now have, you know, something to store that's an expense. They want to do it where it's cheaper. And often that's places like China, where there's quite poor security protections on data. And, for example, in China, your data can be accessed by the government basically at their whim. So there are massive privacy concerns there. The flip is that storing everything within Australia means that we would need to create a lot of data centres to support that, which are very resource intensive. So it is actually a bit of a wicked problem there.
Yeah, that sounds incredibly complicated and just sounds like there's no winning there. We also know that Palantir has a contract with Coles. What can you tell us about this partnership?
Yeah, so what I can tell you about this partnership is that it's quite opaque. I found this from an ABC News article. For Coles, the goal is to optimise its workforce, so very vague language, by analysing over 10 billion rows of data comprising each store, team member, shift and allocation across all intervals a day, every day. So it's basically all of the data that Coles could ever have. So, for example, for Coles employees, it sounds like Palantir is going to have access to all of your employee data. And for those that shop at Coles or are part of their reward systems, Palantir keeps on you. So, for example, your spending habits, your family size, your likes and dislikes, your purchase history, including maybe like any medication you've purchased through them. So it's bad for your privacy.
Yeah, there's it just goes back to something that we've talked about, Lucinda, about this constant surveillance that's creeping up on us just everywhere we go. There's no getting around it. And especially, you know, when we're talking about a huge company like Coles, where there have already been just campaigns against the mistreatment of workers and, the way in which they monopolize business and things like that. This is just sort of adding another layer to that. It's very easy, I think, listening to this to just fall into despair. What would you recommend for people to where to go to read up about about Palantir or about how we're being surveilled, just so that everyone is staying on top of their right to privacy and, I guess, do the best that they can in these situations.
Absolutely. So knowledge is power. You know, these companies, they don't want you to know everything that's going on with your data, because if you did, you'd be really freaked out. But, you know, be freaked out. Look into it. Crikey has some really good articles on this. They had two that came out recently by Bernard Kane on Feb 4 and Feb 3, talking about Trump and ICE and that border data privacy that I was just discussing. Cam Wilson, also another Crikey journalist, has some fantastic pieces on Palantir. If you want to stay up to date on surveillance news, particularly in Australia, subscribe to our newsletter. It's awesome. I make sure of it. You can do that at Digital Rights Watch. There's a big button when you open the website to make it very easy. You can also follow us on social media if you want to stay informed and join our campaigns as well.
Well, thank you so much, Lucinda, for joining us on the show. I think it's really concerning to see just another way in which Australia is tying itself to the US. You know, this is happening in so many different spaces. We've got AUKUS contracts. We've got like things like Palantir at our shores. So it's really great that you're here to explain that all to us. Because, like you said, I think on purpose, you know, it is very opaque and they do try to hide a lot of information. So it's great to have really clear explanation there. So, yeah, thank you so much again, Lucinda, for joining us on the show.
Again, it is always a pleasure.
So we've been speaking to Lucinda from Digital Rights Watch about Palantir. Make sure you go back to our show from last week to catch part one of that conversation. And as Lucinda mentioned just now, you can go to digitalrightswatch.org to subscribe to their newsletter. They send out regular breakdowns of what's happening in the tech world. And as she mentioned as well, there's been a lot of reporting at Crikey, as well as Michael West Media about Palantir. We are going to go to a song now. Juliet, do you want to tell us about this song?
Yes. This song is called Not a Love Song, and it is by the East London singer-songwriter Liang Lawrence. So we hope you enjoy it.
Of first kiss with the first love.
Exactly. You said that before.
I'd like to dive headfirst into the deep end of you. Only come up for air when my toes touch the bottom of your pool. Oh, to be in it, oh, to be in it with you. I'd like to take a bite of everything that you say. To know every letter, every word, and how they taste. Oh, to be in it, oh, to be in it with you.
Like the feeling.
That was Not a Love Song by East London singer-songwriter Leon Lawrence.
Up next, we'll be listening to My Saif. My Saif is a Palestinian organizer with Free Palestine Mission. In this speech from the protest against Isaac Herzog held at Flinders Street Station on Monday, 9th of February, Mai shared her lived experience of living through Israel's brutality as a child and how the settler colonialism dehumanizes.
Oh, it is the wrong one. It is. Yeah.
Mai Saif is a Palestinian organizer with Free Palestine Melbourne. In this speech from the protest against Isaac Herzog held at Flinders Street Station on Monday, 9th of February, Mai shared her lived experience of living through Israel's brutality as a child and how the settler occupation dehumanizes Palestinians as part of their ideology. Whilst confronting and horrific, Mai ends on the inspiring words of her grandfather, who nurtured in her a spirit of resistance and steadfastness, or sumud.
I'd like us to just take one moment, just a moment, and look at everyone around you. Look at the people that are standing beside you, in front of you, behind you. Those people, you, every single one of you, you are our community. Family. You are the voice. You are the voice that our government tried to silence. And you are the people who amplify Palestinian voices in this country. To be cowed and silenced by our government. Every minute, every second. I was asked on Saturday, and it just kept going through my head. I was asked, what would you say to Herzog if he's right in front of you? I just looked at the reporter and said, What do you say to a person who cannot see you as a human being? When they look at a Palestinian face and body, they do not see a human being. They see something less than an animal. It brought back memories. Memories of me as a child when I was 6 years old. And a soldier pointing a gun at my head. With tanks in the streets and tear gas being shot at us coming back from school. And snipers being shot into the crowd. It brought back memories of seeing my grandfather being released from prison, beaten and broken. Physically, but unbowed and uncowed. It brought back memories of his work. damage my body, they may break my bones, but granddaughter, they will never take away my will. They will never take away my voice. They will never take away my resistance. Have courage, have sword, have hope, have dreams, and have a will. I didn't quite understand that as a six-year-old, but I damn well understand it right now. That question reminded me of the stories of family and friends during the First Intifada who had disappeared, who would knowingly carry the Palestinian flag, climb the buildings to carry it and wave it in the air, knowing that they would be shot by snipers, knowing that they would die carrying that flag. And Israel tried everything in its power to trample the idea of a Palestine, of a Palestinian people, a Palestinian voice. It reminded me of the time that I was detained and strip searched and arrested for simply being Palestinian. It reminded me of my cousin who was shot in the back 8 times in 2005 because he dared to go out and get milk for his mother and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. It reminded me of the second Intifada, where Palestinian towns were completely destroyed, brutal military occupation, and my young cousin telling me, don't worry, a five-year-old, I will look after you, I will protect you. I know exactly where to hide if they come for us. Shame. Shame. It reminded me that the Palestinian body was expendable to him. That when he looked at us, I wonder when he looks a Palestinian in the eye, if he's ever done that, had the courage to. Does he see the fire of resistance in our eyes? The pain, the unwillingness to be cowed, and defiance against their violence. Can he see it? Can he see that regardless of what you have meted out against all of us, we will resist you. We have the courage to. And when you look at our faces, when you look at our faces, do you not see every single one of us is of a different color, a different story, a different dream, ambition, feeling like every single one of you here. Does not every single one of us tell a story? And is it our stories, the ones that you try to silence? Is that what you fear? Is our truth what you fear? Is it why you bomb us to smithereens? So you may not see our humanity, but we see every one of yours and ours. We see our humanity. We are a people who preserve life. Who believe in love and care. We believe in the sanctity of humanity. We believe in equal justice, in equality. These are not words. We come out on will come out. Unfortunately, we will not be able to stop protesting. And when you come out, remember, we are not just fighting for just Palestine. Palestine is more than just a place. It is an idea. It is a dream. A dream where every single one of us is equal. No racism, no discrimination. That you come into a Palestinian's home and you light our heart. Everyone is welcome. Every single one of us. And we will march these streets. We will not be cowed in silence. And right now, every single one of you, there are 30 other protests happening across this country. So let us march together for a dream that we are fighting for a future we are fighting for, and not let Herzog and the racist of his ilk take that away from us. Free, free Palestine!
Just listen to Palestinian activist Mai Saif speaking yesterday at the protest against Isaac Herzog at Flinders Street Station. A snap rally has been called for this Thursday, 3 p.m. at Southern Cross Station, when Isaac Herzog will be in Melbourne. Up next, we have a song for you. This is The Actor by Folk Beach Trio, who will be performing a free candlelit dinner concert, not dinner, sorry, bring your own, tonight at Fat Square at 8:30 p.m.
The actor lying on the pillow next to me, through thighs a canyon and bullets below your knees. I know you find it hard to breathe. When flowers bloom at the corner of your street, drive flat for pleasure, insurance and hopefully they get a pay inside your book. What could I say to make this right? Often in fog and then a fight. When everybody's listening, my friends are in the kitchen.
stage, the actor rehearses her new lines. One woman show, I'll see you at opening night. And then we'll look you in the eye.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. Disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Up next, we have a song for you by Ajak Kwai. Ajak Kwai is a South Sudanese musician. Singing in Arabic, Sudanese or English, Ajak conjures a vivid picture of her Dinka heritage. You can also catch Ajak on 3CR's Ubuntu Voices on Wednesdays from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. The next song is from her 2021 EP, Red Sands. This is called Rabina Mana.
Rabina mana, 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 rabina mana
Listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
On the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalisation intersects where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo! Woo!
For our last interview today, we're speaking to Renee Chopping, who's a campaign strategist at Collective Shout and also a trauma counsellor. And Collective Shout is a grassroots campaign against the sexual objectification of women and girls in media, advertising and popular culture. And Renee is here today to talk about Collective Shout's campaign pushing for the App Store and Google Play Store to remove the Grok app after its image editing app has been used to undress women and children without their consent. Welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Renee.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on this early in the morning. So to start off, Renee, could you tell us a little bit about who Collective Shout is and, a bit about the focus of the organisation's work?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you gave us a great intro. I appreciate
that. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So we're a women-led grassroots movement. Our main focus is challenging the objectification of women and the sexualization of children across media, advertising, and online spaces. So we run campaigns that hold companies and tech platforms accountable. We mobilize everyday people to take action, and we advocate at both state and federal levels for stronger safety standards. We also conduct research exposing emerging harms and create practical resources to help communities navigate an increasingly sexualized digital culture.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's such important work when there's, kind of a real lack of regulation in regards to this topic, particularly when it's, multinational tech companies who are kind of following their own rules. We're going to be focusing on Grok today, but I'm sure a lot of people don't actually know what Grok is. Could you tell us a little bit about what Grok is and what some of the features are and how they are sexualizing women and children?
Absolutely. So Grok is an AI chatbot. It's developed by Elon Musk's company XAI and built into X, which we know formerly as Twitter. On the surface, it's marked as a conversational tool with image generation features, but what comes to light is how easily it can be used to create non-consensual sexualized images of real people, overwhelmingly targeting women and girls. So we're seeing Grok used to digitally undress women and children using existing photos and generating explicit images that are then shared publicly online. Researchers that are looking into this and how it's used have been estimating that this tool has been used to produce thousands of sexualized images every hour, which really just shows the scale and speed at which this harm is taking place.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just really concerning as well. Like, obviously AI is moving so fast and, it's hard to sort of keep on top of what all these developments actually mean. And, it's so important for people to actually learn what is going on with Grok. And I know, I read a little bit about how Collective Shout's own staff have been impacted by some of these features. If you're happy to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so some of our team were targeted with sexualized and abusive AI-manipulated content because of the work that we do, for example, calling out the harms of Grok, or in another recent campaign, having video games with themes of rape and incest removed from sale. So this is a weaponization of AI, and it's intended to intimidate victims, including us, and push women out of public conversations. The intent is to ridicule and humiliate. But for us, if anything, honestly, it's just reinforced why these technologies need to be challenged. And we'll keep calling out harm until we see meaningful change.
Yeah, well, no, thank you so much for advocating and for standing up against, such a massive company. And, it is just so horrible. The way that they're targeting and trying to intimidate people who stand up against it. If we sort of go back to the bigger picture about how Grok has actually responded to the controversy, what has been their response and, maybe we'll start with that. What's been their response to the criticisms?
Sure, yeah. There have been some changes after public pressure, like limiting certain features for unverified users and also in countries where related laws apply. But these undressing functions are still available through the app and to paying users on X. So really it's only limiting who can do it and where, which isn't good enough. So sexually exploited content can still be and is still being created and shared publicly using the Grok app.
It really sounds like it's not even a band-aid solution. Like it's hardly doing anything. In light of that, what are the campaign's demands going forward, particularly in relation to the App Store and the Google Play Store?
Yeah, so we're calling on Apple's App Store and Google Play to remove Grok until the ability to undress women and children is fully and permanently disabled for all users worldwide. Mm. So App Stores have actually already taken action in the past in relation to these nudifying apps. They've removed any apps with these capabilities in the past. So where our argument is that Grok should be no exception to this. And beyond Grok, because this isn't just about one app, it's a much bigger issue, we're calling for a global ban on all nudifying generators to prevent this abuse being inflicted on and traumatising more women and girls.
Yeah, I think that's, definitely very necessary. I think it's just astounding to think that, technology is being used and weaponized in this way. It is just, so awful. And, I think just such a misuse of, technological developments as well. And I know that Collective Shout has been, doing quite a bit of media about the campaign and trying to get the message out there. Could you point our 3CR listeners as to, where they can go to find out more and to support the campaign?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So we're on all the socials. So sharing our posts to raise awareness and encouraging others to take action is huge. You can also check us out at collectiveshout.org. To learn more about our campaign, we've made it super easy to call on Apple and Google to take action. We've had over 1,200 people who've already sent emails calling on Apple and Google CEOs to remove Grok from their app stores. So if you head over to our website, you'll see an easy action button. You can send an email within 2 minutes to call on them to remove the app.
Yeah, fantastic. I feel like that's such a tangible action that people can take as well to support the campaign. And, really, I guess the more voices that can get involved and holding Apple and Google Play to account, the better, really.
Absolutely. Every voice matters. Every individual action makes a huge difference.
Yeah, 100%. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Renee, to chat about this really important campaign and to, break down what's actually happening on Grok and why it's such a concerning feature that they've got with their image editing software. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Well, we've been speaking to Renee Chopping from Collective Shout about their campaign against the sexual objectification of women. And you can find out more at collectiveshout.org or go to collective.shout on Instagram as well. So, there's plenty of places to find out more. And, we'll be back after this announcement.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Forests are essential ecosystems, mitigating for climate breakdown, cooling the planet, and preserving the wondrous diversity of life. Yet, they are being destroyed at an alarming rate. Here in the Kulin Nations, logging continues, increasing risk of both fires and floods. The Bob Brown Foundation is calling a National Day of Action, the March in March for Forests. In NAM, join us on Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m. in Parliament Gardens to demand the protection for native forests. Go to marchforforests.org for all the details, including how to volunteer. March for Forests, Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m.
a 3CR supporter.
Today we're speaking with Janice Gobi, who is the Chair for Writers Victoria, about the decision for Creative Victoria to abruptly cut 100% of annual funding provided to the Victorian Writers Association. Writers Victoria is a Melbourne-based centre that provides assistance to writers, providing them with work opportunities, mentorship and writers in production of their work. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Hi. Thanks very much, Julia. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So, So, why are writing organisations like Writers Victoria important for writers and creators alike?
Well, you might all go to university and study a degree in creative writing or some sort of writing degree, or you might not study at all, and you've got a desire to be a writer, but you don't really know where to start. Those practical skills of writing a book or something else, maybe it's a comic book, you don't really have. So we offer practical workshops run by writers themselves. So I'll give you an example. Tony Jordan, who is one of our ambassadors, actually told me the story about attending a workshop about 20 years ago, which was from story to screen. And she said she had no idea how to take her book and actually get it into a film. Now, you know, fast forward 20 years, her film's in theatres at the moment. So it shows you that the kinds of workshops that we offer actually make a difference. They give people practical skills, they build a community so people can find like-minded people, because when you're writing, you know, you're kind of stuck in your garret on your own and you don't know, is this good or isn't this good? We have things like open mic nights where people can come and talk about they can read a chapter from their book, meet other people, make new friends. We have Wednesday and Friday write clubs where people can come and write with other people, one's online. So it builds a community of people who are like-minded, they're creative, and they want to share their craft.
Yeah, exactly. And I think community is a difficult thing for a lot of people to grasp these days. What do you think that this decision from the Victorian government to defund the program says about Victoria's stance on the arts and the government's attitude towards the arts and protecting the arts?
Well, don't even get me started, because at the moment I'm extremely frustrated. We're watching the arts, the creative capital just shrink. There's not enough funding. For example, Creative Victoria gave 17.7 million in this round of funding. In 2022, it was 22 odd million. If you index that amount, it should have been around 25 million. And a number of organisations, not only ourselves, missed out on this. So that tells you exactly what they think about creative people. Easy to take money from the arts and give it to tunnels and who knows what else, but there's no funding for the arts. It's not seen as something essential. But we forget that during COVID, the arts is what sustained all of us. When we were all locked up in our houses, we watched movies, we read books, we looked at art on the walls when we had our Zoom meetings. It's quickly forgotten how artists were kind of used and discarded.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting to see where the money is being invested alternatively. It's definitely not geared towards the arts, which is such a shame, especially since, Melbourne is a literature UNESCO protected city.
Yes, that's the irony of it. We're going to be the only state or territory on the mainland that doesn't have a writers' association. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that Creative Victoria funded was a children's publishing where they publish books for children. So that's great. I really like that idea, encouraging kids to read and write. But what happens when they grow up and they want to be a writer? There's no writers' association for them, because once these organisations disappear, they don't come back.
Why do you think it was Writers Victoria that was defunded?
We don't know. We had a meeting with Creative Victoria. We were told things like our budget that we didn't, well, budget is developed by an investment banker who's our treasurer, his next investment banker. So I would assume his numbers are very, very good. They had a quibble with them because we hadn't been a bit ambitious and included money from Creative Australia and Writing Australia. Well, we felt that that was kind of creative accounting to add that money when we didn't have it. Our first priority had been to stabilise this organisation and get it into the black, which we did. So from facing insolvency at the start of 2025, we managed to get the organisation to break even by July 2025 and have continued to break even since then and even make a small profit. But this didn't seem to resonate with Creative Victoria. They felt that it wasn't ambitious enough. So if you read between the lines, that's kind of not really saying anything and finding an excuse to, you know, I suppose go for soft targets and just say, well, we don't need them. Why would we need a writer's peak body in Victoria?
Yeah, exactly. And it's such a shame because a lot of arts programs like Writers Victoria do run on volunteers anyway, who are passionate enough to offer their time. Because arts means such a lot to a lot of people. So is there anything that we can do to protest against this defunding and support the arts?
Yes, well, thank you for having me on your show, firstly, because that helps raise awareness. Some people out there might not be aware. We have a petition before Parliament. If you told me that it would be the Liberals helping us to get our money back, I would have never believed it, but it's Labour screwing us over. So they have, David Davis, the Shadow Arts Minister, helped us raise a petition in Parliament. We need 10,000 signatures to potentially get our funding back. It triggers a debate. He's already raised our issues in Parliament the other day. And, you know, we're only asking for $147,500 a year for 4 years, $600,000. We lost $660 million on the failed Commonwealth Games. Just to give you an idea. So the state has got nothing to show for that. So we do have this petition. You can sign the petition online. It's quite easy to find if you just Google Writers Victoria. I think we're close to 4,000 signatures. We might have even topped over that. I'm not quite sure. And we are desperate for every signature. So please sign and become a member. Attend a workshop.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Janice. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today, but thank you so much for coming
on the
show.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Julia, for your time.
We've been speaking with Janice Gobi, who is speaking to us from Writers Victoria about the recent announcement to defund the Writers Program. You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast.
And now we're going to do a quick rundown of the show. So at 7:15, we started with a previous interview with Marie Pardy, the lead author of the report by the Footscray Community Response looking into community safety, and that was from Think Again, another 3CR program. Then Fung spoke to Lucinda Thorpe, online privacy campaigner at Digital Rights Watch, about the tech giant Palantir. Then at 7:45, we heard Mai Saif, who spoke at the Free Palestine Melbourne protest yesterday at Flinders Street. Then we spoke to Renee from Collective Shout about the campaign against the sexual objectification of women. And then finally, we've just spoken to Janice Gobi, who is from Writers Victoria, about the decision for Creative Victoria to abruptly cut 100% of the funding to Writers Victoria. And that's all we have time for. Thanks for listening.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.